ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 76 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast, the final one of 2012. I'm so glad you're listening. This week I've got a great conversation with Steve Pugh, artist on Animal Man and co-creator of Hotwire, among other good things. We talk a lot about his creations and what's in the future for him, including hopefully a long stay on Animal Man, so I'm sure you're going to want to listen to that. Then I review this week's comics, followed by Gianluca Glaser joining me for the final news and previews of 2012. Then everything wraps up with a holiday tradition I began last year, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. Okay, I want to welcome to the podcast Steve Pugh, artist of such great things as Animal Man and co-creator of Hotwire, one of my very favorite books. How are you doing today, Steve?
I'm doing all right. Thank you for asking me on.
Great. Let's talk a little bit about Animal Man. That seems to be your most recent gig. What's it like going back to a character that you did a while back and then revisiting it at such an interesting time?
I know. Everybody seems more surprised about it than I am. I mean, it doesn't feel... It feels like a different book, to be honest. I mean, I recognize the characters. I mean, only maybe Cliff and Maxine are pretty much the same as I remember them. Buddy's sort of a new Buddy, and Ellen's a new Ellen, and they've got a new direction. And the whole DC line's got a new feel to it. And, of course, we're not in the Vertigo universe anymore, so things are a bit more action-orientated. So it feels the same but different. It's like coming back to a place you knew, but you know, the buildings are newer and there's new bits to explore. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, what's interesting to me is that the Animal Man book is probably the biggest surprise of the New 52. It really took off like a rocket, you know, when it happened. This was the book that people were talking about quite a bit. And so I was really glad when I heard you were going to be able to go back to the book and talk about it, because I always enjoy your art. Very clear, very easy to understand. Some artists are not quite that way. And I thought that your art is just a perfect fit for Animal Man. So I was very happy to hear that.
That's very kind of you. But, you know, travel made a huge impact with his first few issues. And that's got to be a huge part of what made Animal Man stick in the public's mind.
Did you find yourself going into the vein of what he was doing, or did you try to go back to what you had done previously, or were you taking a whole new spin on it? I mean, how did you approach the art for Animal Man?
Oh, well, obviously, first, when I came on board, all I was really doing was helping out the art team. Taking the book on wasn't really on the table. I was strictly there to help out Travel because he was having some problems in his personal life, not with the artwork. And I tried my best to kind of fit in. And, you know, I hadn't done black and white artwork for, oh God, 7-8 years. I'd been working on Sharkman and Hotwire, and I really had to kind of hit the ground running. I literally didn't have any idea what I was doing. I mean, I was trying out techniques I'd used, you know, back in the day, and I was trying to find inks that were no longer made, and it was pretty chaotic. So thinking didn't really come into it. There was a lot of doing, but not a lot of thinking.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Now, when you found out you were taking over the book, did that impact how you did things?
Yeah. I think that gives you more confidence. Mm-hmm. And it's always been about confidence for me. If I feel secure in what I'm doing, I think that shows through in the artwork. And it makes me faster, which is always, obviously great. Everybody liked that. But there you go, you know, I'm not an artist who deliberately wants to draw a line in the sand. It's really for the writer to make his mark on the book, and then you follow his lead. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it's cool for the reader if you try and make it too much of a transition. You know, you're trying to kind of bring them along with you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, it's interesting to me because Jeff Lemire's star has risen, too. And one of the books that's helped him do that, of course, is Animal Man. What was it like working with him? You know, the book had pretty much taken off by the time you started working with it. Does he have a particular way of working with an artist?
Do you know, Jeff's great. Mm-hmm. The scripts I've had for him have been really, really... And I know, it sounds an odd thing to say, but, you know, sometimes you never know what to expect when you're working with a writer you've never worked before. Mm-hmm. And Jeff pays a lot of attention to character and setting and mood, all the things that I really love. And, you know, you're asking about whether it felt like coming home with Alan Moore. The way he tackles the family really felt familiar. You know, he got a real emphasis on that relationship. I worked on the book originally with Jamie Delano, and that was very much his emphasis. And when he decided to leave, I decided to go at the same time because, well, back then it was the fashion for writers to come in and sort of make their mark on a book, and I didn't want to stick around and see somebody, you know, kill off the family and be a part of that. So I decided, you know, I'll go too. But when I was reading Jeff's stuff, a lot of writers are about shock and awe. You know, they want to kind of, I'm trying to think of a clean way to say this. They want to, they want to establish their manhood and put it on the table. Okay?
Okay.
Jeff was about real, proper writing and having moments that thrill and excite you, but working for them, you know, actually building up to them and having payoffs and not cheating with the family, you know, doing difficult stuff like integrating the grandma, who's, you know, a difficult character for a mainstream comic. Yeah, he's doing all the difficult stuff and making it work, you know, and he produces so much stuff. It's boggling.
It's interesting you bring up the family, because I've read a lot of his stuff now, like Underwater Welder and Lost Dogs and some of his previous work. And he does tend to focus on the family quite a bit. And, you know, for comic books, that's a real change, because we're used to the hero being a single person or an individual, and they might have somebody they get along with. I mean, even Superman and Lois Lane are no longer together. So to see Jeff take over the family, and I'm glad to hear that you enjoy that perspective too, because I think that's something unique in comics. I'm really pleased about that in The Animal Man.
Well, it's always been like a signature, I don't know what you call it, signature move for Animal Man. But I think DC in general has been, this is just me, obviously I don't talk for the company, but I think Marvel has always been about the cool friend, and DC has always been about the supportive family. That, in my mind, when I, you know, think of the books, that's kind of where I see it. So I see Animal Man right in the grand tradition of what DC has always been about.
Well, you know, when you say that, you reminded me of something in the fact that Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo are doing this Death in the Family storyline right now in the Batman books. And they're dealing with, like, the supportive Bat characters and stuff like that. Alfred and Jason Todd, even, and Batgirl and all these other ones. So, yeah, I think what you're saying is very true. That DC tends to have a supportive cast that's very much like a family.
Yeah. Things feel like a DC book or a Marvel book.
Now, of course, right now you're in the middle of a Rotworld event, which is kind of fun. You're getting a crossover, speaking of Scott Snyder. You're crossing over with Swamp Thing. Did you guys have to really kind of work together to make Rotworld happen? Was this more of an editorial thing? How did this whole thing come to be? You know, I know that originally Scott and Jeff had worked together to develop this whole concept, but now making it reality, was this a very involved process? Were you involved in it very much?
Well, there's a fair amount of cross-checking between me and Yannick, which is very upsetting, because I was trying not to look at Yannick Swamp Thing because it was very intimidating. And then I have to read every darn issue. Oh, he knows I love him. But yeah, I mean, we, you know, establishing the kind of categories of the creatures and the hierarchy of that. We very much concentrated on the visual aspect of it. Obviously, the writers had their own little cabal, and they disappeared into hotel rooms and worked on new ways to destroy the world. But when we aren't a party to that. And I tend to find out what's happening. I mean, I can ask what's going to happen, but I like to find out what's happening by just getting the script and sitting down with it. And of course, there's a fair amount of on the hoofness about it. Things change and opportunities arise and opportunities change. So the writers are having to work on their feet and bring it all together, coordinate who can be in the book. And continuity is a lot more strict these days, from what I understand. I mean, I'm kind of on the periphery out here in Britain. But you know, right at the nexus of it, they're working really hard to make this whole sort of 52 thing a really coherent, bound together experience. So that makes everything, consequently, a lot more complicated if you're trying to come out of left field with something. But, you know, it gets done, and that's the main thing.
Well, the numbers certainly seem to bear out that this is working because, you know, DC's numbers are way up, which is a good thing. And there were the stories of people who were standing in line at comic book stores waiting for the new 52 issues to come out. It's not quite that way now. I mean, I think the ordering and the fan contact is enough that it's satisfying the need, which is great. I mean, I know a lot of stores that were going to close before the new 52 hit. So you're contributing, I think, to something that's helping keeping the industry going, and I think that's a great thing. So the question I have for you, though, is do you know how much longer that Rot World is going to continue on, as far as, because we're at number 13, so we're both the Swamp Thing and Animal Man have come out. Do you have any idea how many more issues that's going to continue in?
I actually don't.
Okay. Okay. So you're still working on that, basically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
We're not that far ahead because we have to juggle the lead time and things.
Okay. Well, in a way, I find that encouraging because, you know, I'm enjoying Rot World quite a lot. I love the notion that there's a red and a black and a green kind of thing going on. And I love the fact that Beast Boy now is red because he's part of the red, which I thought was kind of a funny thing. Because Beast Boy's always been green.
Yeah.
And I found that sort of interesting, that the new 52 has aligned all these things sort of differently. Because, you know, the Flash had the Speed Force, which was interesting. When they had the Marvel crossover with JLA and Avengers, when the Flash went over into the Marvel universe, he didn't have any speed because there's no Speed Force in that universe. So I find this whole thing really interesting in that you're redefining the characters in DC quite a lot. And I don't know, if it was me, I'd be having a ball doing these kinds of things. And when I see your art, it seems like you're having a lot of fun doing it too.
It is pretty great. It's been a bit of an adaptation for me because I've never really strayed into the territory of muscly, handsome men. I've always been, you know, monsters and girls. But mm-hmm. I've had to kind of brush up on my anatomy significantly because it's just not, you know, it's always been, you know, Constantine was raincoats and Animal Man was very rarely a human in my day. He spent a lot of time as various creatures. But, I'd never even gone near characters like Beast Boy with my artwork before. And you know, I've briefly got to draw Supergirl, briefly got to draw the Flash. These are all great first for me.
I mean, was that fun?
God, yes. It is. And in the old days, there was a certain feeling that the Vertigo artists were, I don't know, some kind of elitist bunch, and that wasn't true. It can't be elitist in comics. The world's not big enough. So, no. It was just, we were just drawing what we were drawing. Everything's cool. You know, I mean, so long as you can find an attitude, so long as you can find your perspective on what you're going to draw, what you want to say about it, then it comes. I mean, the worst thing is if you're asked to draw something, you just don't have an opinion about it, which is tricky.
Well, now I got to ask you, because now you've dipped your toe in the superhero pool. Any interest in continuing to do that? I mean, Animal Man, of course, now you are drawing Animal Man, and so he's a superhero the way he's done now. Should another opportunity come, say, to draw, think wildly here, Superman, Batman, Teen Titans, any of those kinds of things, would that now interest you since you've had your first taste of it?
I don't know. I'd have a go, but again, it's this thing. I don't think I'm that great at drawing handsome guys. I did a Superman versus Terminator years ago, and I don't think I really pulled off Superman. So, you know, I mean, when you do things like that, you usually find you nail a character about a page before they kill him off, or you stop.
Oh.
So obviously they didn't kill off Superman.
Mm-hmm.
I seem to be better at either aged or misshapen characters. So if there's anybody in the DC universe like that, I don't mean misshapen like Hawk and Dove. I mean,
right.
You know, facially. But yeah, I mean, I'll have a go at anything. But whether an editor or a writer feels I'm the right guy, I don't know.
Is that kind of tough? I mean, it sounds like almost like typecasting with actors. You know, an actor gets typecast into a certain role. You know, like Adam West always used to complain that he was typecast after he was Batman way back in the 60s. Do you find oftentimes that people kind of look at you and see your strengths, and every once in a while you'd like to do something very different from what you're known for, and you find it hard to break into that area?
Well, personally, I don't think of it as typecasting. It's more as I have a range, and I know what works for me, and I know what I do better than other things. And I know that, you know, you should stretch yourself. That's obviously a good thing. But I also have you know, things that I want to explore. I had to step outside mainstream comics to do something in full colour, you know, the Shopman and the Hotwire stuff. I was never going to be allowed to do that in the mainstream. So I had to kind of make my own arrangements. If people are feeling typecast, then you have to take a chance and step outside the safety of the big two. I mean, the big two are a privilege, not a right. Mm-hmm. You know, they don't have to employ you. Mm-hmm. And they have stuff that they want. Their job isn't to give you an opportunity to try something experimental. Sometimes you get the opportunity to do that. But if you want to do that, you should, you know, have faith in it and take a few months off and try it. Mm-hmm. And if it works out, then you can bring it to them and convince them and show them. An editor who's confronted with samples doesn't really have an opportunity to typecast you. Mm-hmm. Simple as that.
Okay. Well, now, as far as Animal Man goes, are you planning to stay with the book for some time?
Yeah. Oh, well, that's the idea. I'll go till I'm pushed or I fall.
They'll have to take a crowbar to get you out, huh?
Yeah, at the minute, I'm having a blast. But, as I said, they aren't my toys. So I'll play them as long as I'm allowed, and then we'll see what's there in the future.
Well, I'm enjoying your art, and I hear from a lot of people how great it is to have you back on the book. So I'm really happy you're there, and I hope that you do stay there for quite a long time. I'm really enjoying the book.
Very, very kind, and I appreciate that.
Well, let's move on to some other stuff that you've done. You've brought up one of my very favorite books, of course, which is Hotwire. I always loved the book. That was one where you actually got to do writing, and I guess it was more of a painted feel than a drawing feel to it. And I loved the stories. I thought you did two miniseries, if I remember correctly. And I saw about a year and a half ago or something, there was a rumor that hit Twitter or something that said that Hotwire was coming back. So I immediately forwarded to you, and your response was, what?
Yeah.
That was a total rumor, apparently.
Well, somebody had tweeted Radical's Twitter account asking about more Hotwire, and they said that they were in negotiations with me for a third series, and that wasn't the case. Okay. But, there is a third series. It's outlined and ready to go, you know, if need be. But at the moment, you know, Radical's pursuing its film properties, and it's less interested in the publishing side of things. What my main objective now is getting the first two series back into print and moving on from there. But that's kind of progressing. Radical and I are in talks with a third party about them getting there.
Well, if Radical's in the process of going towards film products, is there any chance that Hotwire could turn into a film product?
Every chance in the world.
Okay.
I've seen a couple of screenplays, and talks are happening, but I don't know. It's a weird thing. Mm-hmm. I'm in two minds about a Hotwire movie, because in your mind, you see it, and it's your book on film, and there's your characters. The reality of it is probably wouldn't be that. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. Well, you know, producers have to put their mark on things, and so what they'll do is they'll alter it to suit their desires as opposed to being true to what the original content was. So that's kind of hard when your child goes off and dates somebody else and it comes back looking totally different.
Well, I think the way to approach it is I'll concentrate on my comic version of Hotwire. And Radical will do their film version of Hotwire, and they'll just be two sides of the same coin, I guess.
Yeah, two alternate universes, I guess. See, it's interesting to me, you talked a little bit about different kinds of characters that you do. And, of course, Hotwire is not your standard comic character. She's a very short, sort of albino-like girl, as opposed to, you know, most superheroines are big and busty and, you know, and all kinds of stuff. And she's nothing like that. But, you know, in some ways, I think that would make her a more appealing character on a small screen or on a large screen. I always think that women are very narrowly cast on television and on movies. They've got to be a certain kind of person and a certain kind of physical type. I always think that's a real disadvantage. I mean, a man can be anything, can be a scoundrel, can be a wonderful guy, can be a nasty, no good, vampires, you name it. But somehow a woman has to be within this very narrow band. And Hotwire, one of the things that appealed to me so much about it was that it pushed the limits of what a female character can be. And so I would really love to see it continue on, only in the comics, but also on the smaller big screen, just because I think it would open the doors for other female characters. That's what I love about it. Anyway.
I think it'd be a great part. You know, I mean, she's a she's a great part, you know, and she was written to be fun to play. And, you know, I'd never written before, so I kind of approached it with a lot of design philosophies. You know, there were things that I was going to do, things that I hated that I wasn't going to do. And essentially, she's written as a villain. You know, nothing she does is by luck. You know, everything she has, she's worked for. You know, she's educated. The idea of it was somebody who's as proud of their education and their smarts as an athlete would be about how fast they run around a track. You know, one's an acceptable arrogance and the other isn't an acceptable arrogance. You know, it's not acceptable to be arrogant about being smart. There was the hook, you know, and she was. Mm-hmm. And obviously making her not an Amazon meant that she was by default an underdog, so she could be, well, more horrible, but still maintain audience sympathy. She's a fun character, and, you know, the dialogue just writes itself, because when you can be as bad as her to other people, you know, it's really just... And in a lot of ways, she's like a cat, in that, you know, nothing is as funny as a cat losing its dignity, because it's a dignified creature. So, you know, even her bad moments are fun to write.
Well, I hope we get to see Hotwire again, because I really love the character and I really love the book, so I'd like to see more of her. Moving forward, are there other projects you're working on that we should be aware of?
No, I'm absolutely concentrating on Animal Man at the moment. I've got a kind of a side project that I'm toying with called Villainess, which is something I'll be doing if I don't get the opportunity to do more Hotwire. But really, that's just as sort of, you know, it's a very early stage at the minute. It's based on a comic I wrote when I was, 16, 18. It's recycling an old thing.
Well, now's the time to do that, because it seems like creator-owned properties are a lot of the way to go. I mean, every time I interview somebody, they're always talking about their own creator-owned property. So this might be the time to bring something like that to the forefront.
Well, it's nice not to have to answer to anybody. It's as simple as that. The great thing about Hotwire and working with Radical was that I pretty much did what I wanted. The great thing about comics, in fact, you know, done that way, as opposed to a movie, is that, you know, a comic is pretty much as close as you can get, except, you know, maybe a novel, from creator to reader. You know, there's so few people it passes through. The original concept and the original thrust and the original passion passes through so few people until it reaches the reader. And I think that's what's great about the media. And that's what's great about working on creator-owned things. You really don't have to pull back.
Great. Well, that's good. Well, Steve, a lot of success moving forward. Hope you get to stay with Animal Man for a long time, and I hope we get to see Hotwire and any other projects that you have in mind coming. I'd really like to see some more from you going forward.
Thank you very much. So would I.
Okay.
Animal Man!
Faster than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings at a single bound. Look, up in the sky, it's a bird.
It's a plane.
It's Wayne's Comic Review.
Strange visitor from another planet who came to Earth with powers and abilities far beyond those of mortal men. Who can change the course of mighty rivers, bend steel in his bare hands. And now, another exciting episode.
And here are the books that came out this week. There's been a wonderful crossover for the ages that's been coming out most of 2012. It's involving Star Trek The Next Generation and Doctor Who. It's called Assimilation Squared, and the final issue just came out, which is a wonderful wrap-up for the whole series. It's created by Scott and David Tipton with art by J.K. Woodward. And it also has Tony Lee, who's been helping making sure that the Who parts are very accurate. And I do have to say that they've done a wonderful job of keeping the different franchises true to themselves, which I like very much. I'm very happy with that. The likenesses for both sci-fi franchises are also spot on, and that's thanks to Mr. Woodward's being a fan of both and his ability to convert the images of real people into the comics format. It's really well done. The story, of course, is great, involving the Cybermen and the Borg, and things go really well and more very interestingly for all 8 issues. The one thing that stands out to fans of classic Trek is that there was an issue featuring the original Enterprise crew with Tom Baker's Doctor. And it was done in an art style that was very different from the rest of the miniseries, so I liked it a lot. The 8th and final issue wraps up the event very nicely.
nicely and even leaves the door slightly open for a second miniseries, something that I hope happens. I also hope that, like the Star Trek Legion of Superheroes crossover, this event gets a deluxe hardcover bound edition. They'll look terrific together on my bookshelf, believe me. So it's just been a wonderful series. I'd like to see more of this in the future. It's just wonderful, so I highly recommend it. This week's New 52 reviews included the fact that Nightwing and the Red Hood and the Outlaws meet up with the Joker in their crossover participation in the Death of the Family event, which is great, by the way. Batwoman continues to be one of the most literate and interesting comics on the stand art-wise. And two, Wonder Woman's regular comic continues to tell some of the best stories I've seen about the character in quite a long time. Catwoman continues to bring Eclipso into the New 52, while Birds of Prey has the team trying to rescue Katana's husband. Next, I enjoyed DC Universe, which features a Black and Blue story, teaming Black Lightning and Blue Devil. Green Lantern and Green Lantern and the New Guardians came out, and they continue to track the progress of the Third Army, which is truly creepy. Legion of Superheroes features the teens taking on dinosaurs, while Supergirl finds that she likes hell a lot in the Hell on Earth event. Blue Beetle, meanwhile, follows Jamie's adventure near the Reach's homeworld after being transported there by Omak. I'm going to miss that book when it ends before too long. Other books that came out this week included Before Watchmen, Moloch number 2, JSA Liberty Files, The Whistling Skull number 1, and Young Justice number 23 from DC. Boom has Freelancers number 2, another great book. Dynamite has Bionic Woman number 6, Green Hornet number 32, Masks number 2, The Spider number 7. IDW had Lock and Key Omega number 2, and Star Trek The Next Generation Hive number 3. From Image, we got Happy number 3, Super Dinosaur number 16, Supreme number 67, and Thief of Thieves number 11. Marvel has Captain America number 2, Daredevil number 21, Indestructible Hulk number 2, and Venom number 28. From Oni Press comes Sixth Gun number 27, and finally from Valiant, Harbinger number 7, and Exo Man of War number 8. And those are the books that came out this week. Okay, it's time for this week's news and previews, and with me as always is Gianluca Glazer. How are you doing today, Gianluca?
Doing well. Happy holidays.
Well, same to you. Same to you. Whatever holidays you celebrate, hope you enjoy them. Let's talk a little bit about news. What news should we be aware of this week?
Sure. Some interesting stuff going on over in D.C. Everyone's favorite editor-in-chief, Bob Harris, has been promoted to senior vice president dealing with editing. Mm-hmm. So he's going to be a big overseer moving up the DC ladder. We've reported before about Kieran Berger leaving Vertigo. Shelley Bond is replacing her. She's been around since Vertigo was formed, doing editing work. She will be reporting to Hank Canals, who will be the senior vice president of Vertigo in integrated publishing. That's kind of an interesting rise to power there. You know, he was a writer. Basically, he's gotten a pretty big senior vice president position. Mm-hmm. In the shakeup with Vertigo, with Shelley Bond moving to executive editor, Will Dennis has been promoted to group editor, and Mark Doyle has been promoted to just regular editor. I guess he was an assistant prior to that.
Yeah, well, Bob Harris has been around D.C. for a while now, so I'm not surprised at his promotion.
No, he's been heavily praised for his work. He was involved with the D.C. New 52, so Dan Didio is very high on him as well, too. Interesting kind of gossipy kind of news. You know, I talked to you before about Gail Simone possibly leaving Batgirl.
Right.
Well, interesting development since I last talked to you about it. Supposedly she was fired by email from her editor of Batgirl. And then less than a week later has apparently been rehired.
Yeah.
And brought back on as writer for Batgirl.
Yeah.
There has been no, like, official statement from DC regarding either the firing or rehiring. This has all been talked about via social media.
Mm-hmm.
It is interesting, though.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any comments in regards to the story?
Well, in a way, I'm really happy about that because it's nice that the fans can kind of rise up and actually voice their disapproval and DC actually listen for once, because so often when people go, but of course, you know, you have to give Gail Simone credit. She was rather dignified about the whole business. She didn't really rag on DC like Rob Liefeld might have.
Yeah.
So I think that she left the door open. She did say she was talking with DC about other projects, but I think they didn't want people coming to every convention and saying, "Why did you take Gail Simone off of Batgirl?"
That's true.
So she's back, apparently, and that's a good thing.
Right. No word yet if, like, that two issues where there was supposed to be a transitional writer is still going to happen or not. So we'll see in regards to that. Mm-hmm. This is kind of interesting news. I'm a big fan of the pulp characters like Doc Savage, you know, the Spirit, that kind of stuff. Apparently, DC has let go of the rights to those.
Oh, really?
Dan Didio explained on his Facebook page that the non-DC pulp characters, Doc Savage, the Avenger, and the Spirit are no longer with DC, although Didio did go on to say that he's hoping that another publisher will get them to print soon. Mm-hmm. But to note, even though they don't have the rights to anything new involving the Spirit character, they still do have the rights to publish the Will Eisner classic Spirit Adventures. I probably, if I had to guess, I would bet that all three of those characters show up in Dynamite in the near future.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah. Considering they have the Spider and the Mask series going on, which also has the Shadow, it's not out of the realms to think that Doc Savage and Spirit and the Avenger will show up there.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting there. Over in Marvel news, people have been trying to kill Dan Slott.
Mm-hmm.
Well, apparently people on Twitter have, at least. Twitter's such a great tool.
Mm-hmm.
Fans to communicate with the creators, ask questions. You even get lovely things like a Rob Liefeld meltdown.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, there is a dark side to Twitter as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Dan Slott had previously joked about having to go into hiding when mm-hmm. people find out how he plans to end The Amazing Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Now that the main thrust of the saga in which Doc Ock swaps bodies and memories with Peter Parker has become apparent, the writer has received enough death threats via social media that his Twitter profile now reads, "Death threats and threats of violence are being reported. Insults and vulgarity are being blocked. Not criticism. Please be civil. Thank you."
Mm-hmm.
That's
wild, because, you know, you'd think the fans would just sort of sit back and actually let it take place before they start screaming.
Sure. It's the dark side of fandom. Anyone who would want to kill somebody over a comic book, well, obviously, is either has no life or, you know, lacks a certain mental capacity there.
Mm-hmm. So, strange.
Yes, very strange.
Yeah.
This is the fact that the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV pilot is moving along.
Mm.
Jeff Loeb, Marvel's head of TV, is ecstatic about working on this S.H.I.E.L.D. pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Loeb told Previews World, which is Diamond's online publication,
mm-hmm.
working with Jed Whedon, Marisa, I don't know how you can pronounce it, and Jeffrey Bell is a blast, and bringing in Clark Gregg to play Agent Phil Clausen, the best.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully we can be on the air in the fall of 2013 on ABC.
Wow.
Things moving along there.
Mm-hmm.
And remember when we came back from our break, mm-hmm. I had up the whole Disney buying Lucasfilm deal, mm-hmm. and about the worry on my part in regards to the Star Wars comics staying at Dark Horse.
Mm-hmm.
We kind of discussed this for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, an update in regards to it.
Okay.
Of course, it's not good news, but mm-hmm. Disney's watching blog Blue Sky Disney has reported that the Dark Horse license is up after 2013 and will not be renewed.
Mm-hmm.
The report indicates that Marvel will begin publishing Star Wars comics again. They originally did prior to Dark Horse, but they'll be returning to doing that in 2015 when Star Wars Episode 7 premieres.
Mm-hmm.
If accurate, this would give some time for Dark Horse to sell down its inventory and to clear the channel of Dark Horse Star Wars products before Marvel starts shipping.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm afraid, of course, once Marvel gets their hands on it, they'll do just like they did with the Disney stuff. You know, once they got the rights to it, they basically sit on it. So I think you'll see a lot fewer Star Wars stuff coming out in the future.
Yeah, I mean, they'll still release a comic tie-in with the movie. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you consider how much material Dark Horse publishes Star Wars related, it's a lot. I really don't see Marvel coming anywhere close to it.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a big hole, too, for Dark Horse, because that's a big money-selling license. They make a lot of books for Star Wars, and Star Wars is probably their biggest license, you know, followed by Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Mm-hmm.
Star Wars lives on, though.
Yeah.
You know, Buffy has ended. Joss Whedon has moved on to other projects.
Mm-hmm.
So it is kind of sad to hear that. They should consider maybe getting the Warhammer 40,000 mm-hmm. books. I think it would be a good fit for them. It's something that Boom had. Mm-hmm. I was around when the license first started. Mm-hmm. Other news, The Walking Dead creator Robert Kirkman has told Comic Book Resources this week that digital sales are now 25% to 30% of his comic and graphic novel sales. He states, quote, "When it started at Comixology, we were doing 5%, and as we've continued to work with Comixology and branched out into other digital platforms, we've seen digital sales go from 5% of print sales to we're getting close to 25 to 30% of print sales," he said. That's kind of cool there. Mm-hmm. Probably also has to do something with the show becoming huge over time.
Yeah, too true.
You probably got people who don't want to go to a comic shop but do want to read the comic book, want it now, and can easily get it immediately, you know, through Comixology. So.
Yep.
And finally, in IDW news, Thunder Agents. IDW plans to release both Omnibus Collections and previously published Thunder, you know, it's an acronym, Agents. new comics based on the property, the company announced. The previous released issues are formidable and include Wally Wood, Steve Ditko, Gil Kane, and lots of other people as well, too.
DC recently had a series that Nick Spencer was doing, and I guess this signals the end of that.
I guess so. Also, IDW has acquired the rights to two other Tower Comics titles, Undersea Agent and Fight the Enemy, in its deal with Radiant Assets, which owns the properties. There you go.
Wow.
Cool.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do with it.
Absolutely. As far as news goes, that's all I got. Do you have anything happening?
Yeah, let me mention two quick things that I've got. Judge Winnick, of course, has basically left DC Comics recently. But we discovered that one of his comics creations is going to show up on the CW's Arrow. It's going to be Dodger. Oh. Yeah, Dodger comes, and he's going to be played by James Callis, who was Gaius Baltar in Battlestar Galactica. He's going to play that character. Arrow's been doing a good job of putting in a lot of these characters. We had Huntress, Deadshot's been in it, and several others. So it's a good thing. It was created by Mr. Winnick and Mike Norton, and they're both happy about that. They like the character real well. He first appeared in Green Arrow and Black Canary number 7 as a thief, and he becomes an ally of Green Arrow eventually. And in the comic, he operated out of London and was willing to steal anything from information to advanced technology. So he's going to be a jewel thief, though, on this show. So we'll see what happens with that.
Right.
The second bit of news I have, and of course it's related to movies this time, is that Jamie Foxx, who's having all kinds of fun with Django Unchained, maybe too much fun, is going to play Electro in the 2014 Amazing Spider-Man sequel.
Yeah.
And he came out recently and said he is not wearing green and yellow, that he actually starts out being a friend of Spider-Man, kind of his eyes on the street, and then something bad happens, and he probably gets charged with electricity, and then he takes on Spider-Man instead.
Wow.
So that'll be something different about that. I wonder if he's going to get to kill all the white people again. Well, we'll see about that. But anyway, that's all the news that I've got. So next week is actually a very slow week on the 26th. And so I thought we would touch on that real briefly and then maybe move on to the week after. I was actually going to try to combine these because it was so slow. But we can do it a week at a time if you want. Do you want to talk about next week?
I actually have January 2nd. I didn't list the stuff that's on next week, basically.
Oh, let me do that real quickly then. There's just very few stuff. There's Adventure Time number 10, the Dynamic Forces cover, Aquaman number 15, Before Watchmen, Night Owl number 4, and Justice League number 15. And then there's a Shadow special from Dynamite. Marvel's got the Amazing Spider-Man number 700, which you're referring to the plot that was revealed. It's actually been on sale on eBay already because I know the stores already have these books. It's selling it for $70 or something like that. And if you wait like a week, you can get it for cover. So that's silly stuff. So anyway, that's all that's going to come out on the 26th. What have you got for January 2nd?
Sure, there's a whole lot of stuff. If you're into your leather-bound books, Archaea has you covered there. Conspiracy of the Planet of the Apes, leather-bound edition. It goes on sale. As well as leather-bound edition for Gunneric Court Volume 1 and The Killer Volume 1, which is a really good book. They are pricier, of course. You know, it's the leather-bound editions, so they range from like $40 and up. For Boom Studios' side, you mentioned Adventure Time. Well, there's a release of Adventure Time, Marceline and the Scream Queens, number 1, San Diego, get a sketch cover, which they have listed for $10. So,
wow.
Interesting. And then continuing the Adventure Time stuff, they have Adventure Time with Fiona and Cake, issue number 1, and it's going to have 5 different covers. Mm-hmm. The first two, A and B, are regular priced, and I believe C, D, and E are going to be some type of variant price cover. So
it's going to be like Wolverine here. They're going to be Boom Studios' Wolverine, all these Adventure Times.
Right, exactly.
Man.
Grace Randolph, who you've interviewed, they have a second printing of Superbia number one, her ongoing series.
That's good.
And then you have the Hypernatural San Diego variant cover, which is $10, as well as Hypernatural's number seven goes on sale, and it's got three different covers. Mm-hmm. And then Planet of the Apes Cataclysm number five goes on sale with three different covers as well, too.
Mm-hmm.
Except for Dark Horse, you have Hellboy and Hell number two.
Yeah.
Over in DC. All right, this is interesting stuff. You have American Vampire number 34. I guess it's going to go on a hiatus soon. Mm-hmm. Arrow number two goes on sale based on the show we were talking about previously.
Mm-hmm.
Batman Incorporated number six. I'm not sure. When is it that Grant Morrison leaves that series at?
It's got a few more issues and then he'll be gone.
There is a Batman Incorporated trade paperback, but I have to assume, given the fact that issue 6 comes out the same week, that this is based off of the prior to the New 52 Batman Incorporated series that was going on. So I have to assume it's a trade of that. Joshua Hale Fialco's I, Vampire number 15 goes on sale. Really good book. The late Joe Kubert Presents, number 3 of 6, goes on sale as well, too. Justice League Dark, number 15, with Jeff Lemire. You have Punk Rock Jesus, number 6, on Vertigo's side. And then the trade paperback version of Alan Moore's Saga of Swamp Thing, volume 3. They've all been released, the Saga of Swamp Things. It's hardcover books. So DC is taking a sweet time. The trade versions of these. I believe there's like 8 or so. And then you have Talon, number 3. Have you actually checked that out yet?
Yes, I love Talon. That's one of the great books out. Interestingly enough, related to this, they've added a female Talon to Birds of Prey.
Oh, interesting.
So the Talons are obviously going to be very popular for a while.
Yes, based off of the Court of Owls storyline from Scott Snyder.
Now, interestingly enough, they're collecting that whole Court of Owls story into one great big huge hardcover. I don't know how much it's going to be. It's probably going to be based on the zero issues and the number one issues. It's probably going to be $150.
Wow.
But there's a lot of issues because it crossed over into several books, just like the Joker thing is. So.
Well, I hope they do that for the Rot World storyline that's going on right now with Animal Man and Swamp Thing. It also has incorporated Frankenstein, Agent of Shade.
Right.
Over on Dynamite Entertainment, Flash Gordon Zeitgeist number 8 goes on sale. A special version of Mass number 1, the Dynamic Forces Arnian Saif red cover, which is $15. Jeez. You have Thundar number 5. Jay Lee does the covers for all of those. Great artist. Thundar is about a guy who wakes up, I guess he was in some helicopter crash, doesn't remember how he got there, who he is really, and this is kind of a weird world full of strange creatures, dinosaurs, those kinds of things. But from the title, Thundar, you think it's the Thundar from Down Under.
Yeah, I know. I know. That's
a lot of Sim Show.
Well, they always have Panther, and I like to point out that all these things end in ah.
Yes, it's not. Hold on to your wallets. It's not that Thundar.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tom Snagowski's Vampirella Strikes number 1 goes on sale. Tom writes for television, and he had previously worked on the Vampirella series. You have Warlord of Mars number 22 with a Dynamic Forces Red Risque cover. $15 again.
Wow.
That's pretty pricey.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have several different versions of Warlord of Mars, Deja Thoris number 19 and 20. 19 is the expensive cover, risque as well, too. And then you have regular editions of issues number 20 on sale. That's a lot of stuff this week.
Yeah.
No one's holding back. IDW side, you have the crossover Mars Attacks Popeye, one comic. You have three different versions of that. Berkeley Breath does a cover. He's famous for Bloom County, Outland. He created Opus the Penguin. He did the original Mars Needs Women comic, which film.
Yeah.
Do very well.
No. No, poor guy.
No, but it's worth noting only because of that.
Oh, gee.
It's basically an Opus looking like one of the Martians cover. And then you have a lot of My Little Pony Friendship is Magic coming out. You have second printings of their issue number 1 covers, A through F. You have a second printing of the complete box set of the first issues.
Wow.
Yes. And then you have issues number 2, A through C, and then 3 incentive covers as well that are not priced but are probably going to go through the roof. And then something I personally love is the Woodwork Wallace Wood collection from 1927 to 1981. Collected in one hardcover, it is $60 though. Wally Wood is a great artist.
Mm-hmm.
In other news, my wife's phone is going off in the background and doesn't seem to want to answer it in this podcast.
Okay.
Which comic side, you have Darkness 109. David Hines is a great writer for that. And if you love Fatale and Ed Brubaker, you get a double dose. Fatale number 11 goes on sale, as well as Fatale Volume 2, The Devil's Business trade paperback. Fatale is now an ongoing series, by the way. Originally, it was supposed to end issue 11. Wondering how the story is going to take following issue 11. On Marvel's side, you have the Dark Tower Gunslinger Man in Black Hardcover Premier Edition. Iron Man number 5 goes on sale for Marvel Now. Then you have a Marvel's Iron Man 3 Prelude leading up to the film. It's the first of a 2-issue miniseries. Oh, and of the abundance of stuff coming out from the Pixar Disney side, Marvel is releasing Monsters 2 of 2.
And Monsters, Inc.
And that's it.
Wow.
Issue number 1s, you have Morbius, the Living Vampire number 1, going on sale. You have New Avengers number 1 of the Marvel Now. You also have a New Avengers Breakout prose novel, hardcover. Okay, you know what a prose novel is, right?
So it's all words.
Yeah, it's all words, no pictures. Just don't run out there and just buy your own New Avengers and be like, what? Why is this no pictures? You have another collection there. You have Nova Classic Volume 1 trade paperback. Oz, Dorothy and the Wizard of Oz trade paperback. In addition to that, there's the Road to Oz number 4 of 6. And then Titan Publishing has the Complete Flash Gordon Library, Volume 2, the Tyrant of Mongo hardcover book for close to $40. And then that's it on my end.
Okay, let me run down a couple of things. You referred to a couple of things. I bet there's a lot of stuff that's coming out that people wish they could have gotten out before Christmas.
Sure.
There's a mountain of T-shirts and stuff like that. There's Doctor Who socks, for example.
Good morning.
And there's like lady socks that are striped and men's socks that are dots and all these kinds of crew socks from the TARDIS and all this stuff. I'll bet you anything they tried to get all this stuff out before Christmas, but now they're actually going to have to try to sell it afterwards. There's even a Star Trek Next Generation Enterprise D keychain for $12.
They waited too long to get it to Diamond. People have to take some days off.
Yeah. Yeah, eventually. As far as books go, there are a couple of them that intrigue me. Oh, there's Batman Beyond Unlimited, which I always love from DC. I think that's a great book. Savage Hawkman, which I like, number 15. Teen Titans 15. There's also from Avatar Press, one of my very favorite books. It's a miniseries. I wrote a column recently at Word of the Nerd Online about hero worship, which is a concept from Zach Penn and a bunch of folks. And number 6 of 6 is coming out. It's the end of the miniseries. And boy, have I loved that. It's going to come out in a trade or a hard cover, so I'm really happy that that's coming out. I wish this would have come out before the end of the year. I could have considered it all in this year, but if you haven't read that book, boy, do I highly recommend it.
What's it about?
It's about a teenager who goes to visit something like the Fortress of Solitude of a Superman-like character called Zenith. When he gets there, he starts to feel woozy and weak, and when he goes back home, suddenly he discovers that he's got Zenith-like powers.
Wow.
And the miniseries is kind of interesting because he interacts with Zenith, who is something of a disappointment. Would Superman in reality be a very moral and upstanding guy, or would he push people around because he could? Well, Zenith in this book pushes people around because he can. And he's got a thing in his ear that people can talk to him, his PR firm can talk with him and tell him what he should be saying, what he should be doing.
Right.
And he is not what you consider an upstanding guy. Towards the end, of course, they've got to fight each other, and that's what's going to happen in issue 6. We're going to see the two of them take on each other, and it's going to be very fascinating. A lot of twists and turns along the way. Very interesting book. Well done. I like the fact that Zenith is somewhat Caucasian, while the teenage guy is very much of a mix. He's somewhat Hispanic-looking and stuff like that, so he's a much more diverse character. And Zenith wears blue and black. He wears red and black in the same kind of costume. Very good book. It's probably the only Avatar Press book that I buy. And I bought it on a whim, but boy, is it good. I really like it. So I would say if anybody hasn't picked that up, I'm sure it's going to come out in trade, or I hope hardcover. And when it does, then that's what we'll have to do.
No gore, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the Avatar books are pretty gory.
Yeah, this one is not. It's very straightforward superhero. But like I said, it's got that very unique twist to it that I like, that the superheroes are not all. It's something like The Boys in the sense that not everybody who has powers is a good person. So yeah. I like that. Yeah. I like that about it. Anyway, anything else that we should talk about before we call it quits?
That's it as far as comic books you're looking forward to?
Yeah.
That's about it, I guess.
Okay, John, look, I want to thank you again for helping this year, the second year with the podcast. I appreciate you participating and bringing all the good information to it.
No problem. I'm very happy to be part of Word of the Nerd now.
Yeah, Word of the Nerd Online. Because if you go to Word of the Nerd, it's a different site than Word of the Nerd Online.
Ah.
So I have to point that out.
Interesting.
But we'll talk with you in 2013.
All right. Happy New Year to you, too.
And now it's time for my yearly holiday tradition, the playing of Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas. This video is actually available on YouTube. If you go to that site and look up Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas, you'll find it there. It's from the folks who do I'm a Marvel and I'm a DC kind of videos, and there are plenty of them. I think this is one of their first ones. What you really need to know is that there are three voices. The first one is Alfred, the second one, of course, is Batman, and the third one is Santa Claus. And it has an interesting holiday message that I like to communicate. So without any further ado, Twas the Dark Night Before Christmas.
'Twas the night before Christmas, and all through Wayne Manor, not a sound could be heard, especially not laughter. There were no stockings hung and no tree filled with lights, not a single Christmas decoration in sight. Master Bruce in his costume, and I in my robe, were up late on the lookout for evils unknown. I missed Christmas, but he said he didn't have time. None at all, ever since the tender age of 9. It saddened me, watching him year after year, never taking in joy, only dealing out fear.
I say, sir,
I pleaded with all of my might,
Master Grayson is having a party tonight. Master Drake and Ms. Gordon are sure to be there. Why not leave this bleak cave and enjoy some fresh air?
I've outgrown Christmas, Alfred,
he answered each year.
You can go if you want to, but I'm needed here.
I sighed and walked upstairs to turn off the lights.
Merry Christmas,
I said. His reply was,
good night.
I walked up to my bedroom, got under my sheets, and prepared to drift off into sweet, peaceful sleep.
Suddenly a noise woke me up with such a clatter, I ran to my window for more on the matter. And what should my wandering eyes happen to find but a man in a sleigh with 8 reindeer... No, 9! I was off to tell Master Bruce what I had spied. The fat man in the sleigh was in for a surprise. But it was my surprise. He had beaten me there. Just how fast was this man who could sled through the air?
Who are you?
Master Bruce yelled, demanding to know. The fat man's belly shook as he laughed.
Ho, ho, ho! Don't you know?
He asked, giving his heels a click.
Santa Claus, Father Christmas, Kris Kringle, Saint Nick!
The Batman moved slowly, not wanting to harm him.
Right, Santa. Let me take you back home to Arkham.
But the man disappeared. He was gone in a flash, leaving only some traces of old soot and ash. Suddenly, he was back just as soon as he'd left. This man was indeed quite fast in spite of his heft.
I've come here in peace,
said the man.
Have no fear,
Batman said.
Then explain to me why you've come here.
The jolly man laughed.
Christmas time is at hand. I bring gifts of joy to everyone in the land. The good people come to me with their requests for their heart's desire, and I do my best.
I need and want nothing from you,
Batman said.
Go and take to the streets of Gotham with your sled.
The man in red snickered and gave him a wink.
The person I'm here for is not who you think. I've no gift for you, though you've done much good, it's true. But the present I'm bringing tonight, well, is you. For when it comes to Christmas, you just disappear, and you leave behind all of the friends you hold dear.
Bruce said,
hold on a minute now. That isn't true. I give plenty of presents at Christmas. I do.
Gifts of cash, food, drink, clothes, anything I can find. So then how can you say that I leave them behind?
Giving gifts is something for which you've had a knack, but the spirit of Christmas is still what you lack. Your gifts are all sent, none given face to face, and you've never even accepted an embrace. If you're given a gift, you just turn it away, denying your friends what their hearts want to say.
I know all of their feelings, and they all know mine. Gifts are simply a symbol for which I've no time.
Well, Christmas is a time for which I've always felt. Allowing others in. Let your defenses melt.
My defenses are fine.
Batman furrowed his brow.
It's just a sign of weakness to let them go down.
Santa sighed.
I have never, as long as I've lived, had to teach 'tis better to receive than to give. I came here to open up your heart and your mind. You're determined to keep them both closed up, I find. You're just too filled with anger and pain and regret. Probably about both of your parents, I bet. You'd tell them you loved them if you could somehow, just like all of your friends want to tell you right now. Oh, the gift of allowing love to be expressed is one of the greatest gifts that one can get. For the past is behind us, the future unknown, and the moment is all that we have to call home. And so, now I leave you with this to think on.
And with that, this St. Nicholas fellow was gone. The master was silent. He was lost in thought. I wondered if this was what that fat man sought.
Alfred,
he said sharply, giving me a fright.
You mentioned something about a party tonight.
Soon we were dressed and ready and out on our way. Surely this was a miracle, one had to say. He had come bearing gifts and was going inside when he stopped to look up because he had spied that Santa Claus fellow,
I exclaimed in the dark. Master Bruce simply smiled, looked up, and said,
"Thanks, Clark."
And I heard Batman say as he walked out of sight,
"Merry Christmas to all. Well, at least for tonight."
I want to thank everyone who participated in this year's Wayne's Comics podcast, my second year. It was a real year of change with several transitions involved in my personal life as well as in the podcast. So I appreciate everyone who followed me wherever I went and also to the new people as well. May you enjoy whatever holidays you celebrate this season. I'll be back in 2013 with plenty of news, interviews, reviews, and previews. But until then, keep reading your comics.